Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part, and I am your host, Vincent Treewell. This evening, we are going to be discussing a topic more in the true crime, weird crime, unsolved crime area than in the esoteric or the paranormal, but I think it will still be interesting. We will be discussing 26 years of the JonBenet Ramsey case. To give the most obvious warning ever, we will be discussing some disturbing topics because we're talking about the sexual assault and murder of a small child. So, I mean, that's what it's about. And if that's something that you don't want to listen to, then you should probably skip this one. I barely need to give an introduction because it's such a famous unsolved crime. But yes, that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about JonBenet Ramsey, her murder, and the 26 years that it has remained unsolved. And I guess I'll just start off by putting out some disclaimers. I have no direct involvement with the case. I don't have any information that anybody else who hasn't, who's done reading and listening and watching things about it wouldn't know. I have law enforcement and attorney experience, but that doesn't mean that I know more about this specific case than anybody else. And I'll put out the obvious spoiler alert that I have not solved it. I have a theory that I'm going to introduce that I have not heard elsewhere, but has probably been proposed by somebody else, because the sheer volume of commentary on this unsolved murder has, I mean, it's right up there with the Kennedy assassinations or, you know, any other number of really huge unsolved or questionable killings over many years. The sheer just reporting on this case is staggering. A Goodreads search revealed the most significant 15 books about the JonBenet Ramsey murder. In addition to those 15, there's more, but that doesn't even include the ones where her murder is part of a discussion of other unsolved crimes. So, I mean, there's tons and tons of material. I'm familiar with some of it. I haven't read every single book. I have not watched every single interview with every relevant and semi-relevant person, but I have followed this case fairly closely since it happened. I remember when it happened. Christmas of 1996, I was a security guard and had been accepted to the police academy. So that was where I was at in my life many, 26 years ago. And I guess what I want to talk about here, I will not be getting in the weeds so much with the evidence. All of that's available online in vivid detail for anybody who wants to look it up. That's not what I intend to do here. I don't, much like the Kennedy assassination, you could go and, you know, if you really wanted full coverage, a full description, you know, this would take hours and hours. And, well, there have been entire podcasts devoted just to the JonBenet Ramsey murder. I want to talk from a bit of a different angle. And this was my intention to do it this way, because I always knew I was going to do a JonBenet Ramsey episode, but I didn't know exactly how I wanted to go about it. And then I was listening to Conspiranormal, and they had the Adam Sain and Sir Feil Stevenson, Conspiranormal, absolutely must listening in my book, the guys who put on the Strange Realities event. And yes, a fantastic podcast. And one of their recent guests was Dr. Richard Spence, who who is a respected true crime writer and has covered numerous unsolved crimes, murders, and other things. And he spoke at some length about the difference between facts and narrative. And that struck a chord with me, because my views on the murder of JonBenet Ramsey have changed 180 degrees over the years, for reasons that I will explain. But what has really changed is the narrative, the story that explains the facts. And when I saw one way in 1996, I see a very different way in 2022, a completely opposite way. And I just, right here and now, want to talk about how my perception of the case, which I think is probably at least started as very similar to many, many other people, how that's changed and why that's changed over the years, and how much was that based on facts, and how much was that based on narrative, perceptions, interpretations that may or may not have had any validity at all. So that's kind of where I'm coming from with this tonight. Almost immediately after JonBenet Ramsey was murdered, her parents came under intense suspicion, both by the police and by the media. And it was very quickly assumed that her parents, John and Patsy Ramsey, had, at least one of them had killed her, and that everything else was staged, and that this was all a cover-up because of they had murdered their daughter. One, at least one of them had murdered their daughter. And I will be quick to admit that I fully jumped on that bandwagon and completely believed that one or both of the Ramsey parents were guilty. But when I look back on that, I look at what my reasoning was, I have to see some huge, complete flaws, things that were just not relevant, things that were completely false, or at least completely misinterpreted. And that was, I was far from alone in that camp. In fact, I think if you surveyed people, at least people who are at all interested in true crime, you'd find a great majority believe that her parents were culpable in some way. I remember very clearly, only a few days after the crime occurred, the mayor of Boulder, Colorado, assuring the public that there was not a killer on the loose, which, considering that the investigation had just begun, I can't imagine why that was a good statement to make when you don't know that. Don't know that at all. There was a heavy presumption of guilt on the Ramseys. And when I look at, well, why did I feel that way? Why did I believe that? And, to some degree, why did the police believe that? And I won't go into the Byzantine workings of how badly this investigation was mishandled. They're well documented, and yeah, the general consensus is the police did a pretty terrible job and probably should have kept the FBI around, but they didn't. And once JonBenet Ramsey's body was found, it was clear this was not a kidnapping, and the FBI did not have jurisdiction. However, any police department can request FBI assistance, and they certainly would have gotten it. But, and some people see conspiracy behind that. I really don't. I see ego and incompetence behind it, but I don't see any attempt cover up by the police. No, I don't think that's what happened at all. I think they just wanted the FBI out of their fiefdom, and they would handle this. And they proceeded to handle it very badly. So, I look at why did I think the parents were guilty? I guess I should just add, for those who haven't been reading JonBenet Ramsey stuff for the last couple of weeks preparing to do this, I should just bring up some basic facts of the case so that we're all on the same page. JonBenet Ramsey was murdered on or about Christmas Day of 1996. She was found, well, let's start from the beginning. Her mother reported that she found a note, a ransom note, and then learned that her daughter was not in her bed. The Ramseys called 911 on the morning of December 26th. The police responded quickly, and based on the contents of the note, the FBI soon became involved. Relatively soon. A subsequent search of the house, which the police have taken a lot of criticism for, was done by John Ramsey, her father, and the police had done a cursory search but had not done a thorough search of the house, which I would have to say is understandable considering there's a ransom note that implies that she's been taken from the scene. There's not much point in looking for somebody when you think they're already gone. But yes, just as procedure, they should have done a thorough search of the house and not sent a possible suspect to do the search. The police officer who told Mr. Ramsey to go look around said that he was just trying to find something for him to do because everyone was stressed out and, you know, there's nothing more happening right now. Anyway, Mr. Ramsey found the body, and when I say that, you know, this is the statement that, you know, this is what we know. This is what we know. Mr. Ramsey found his daughter's body in a wine cellar in their basement and brought her upstairs, and this kidnapping case suddenly became a murder case. So that's just to, you know, set the scene of how things got to be that way. At that point, the FBI was not asked to stay around and assist in a murder investigation, even though their help would have been immeasurably valuable, as Boulder has extremely few murders, and almost no one on the Boulder Police Department is truly an experienced homicide detective at that time. But that's the way things went down. Decisions were made. And the press was involved not long thereafter. And very soon, the suspicion was entirely on the Ramsey parents. And in looking at why did I believe this, and why did so many people believe this, what narrative convinced us that they were guilty of killing their own daughter, especially in a vicious and, you know, really horrible way? And I made a list of several things that I believe were important to the narrative of the parents being guilty. One, and the thing that really, I remember, really bothered me was the child pageants that JonBenet was in, that Patsy Ramsey had definitely encouraged her daughter while she was six. So, I mean, she's putting her there. And she'd been in pageants for multiple years, and did a lot of them and won a number of them and was well on her way in the pageant world. I have to tell you, as a 25-year-old working-class guy, that looked sick as hell to me. That looked like, this is just perversion. This is, you're taking a six-year-old and dressing her up like she's 20. What the hell is wrong with you people? That was, and I'll be honest, that was the core of the judgment that a lot of people brought to this case. The suspicion of the parents that, well, look how they dressed their daughter up. At that point, I had no idea that such a pageant world even existed. Toddlers and Tiaras had not come out. I was totally unaware that that world existed and that normal people participated in it. I had no, that was news to me, and considering the news arrived with a sexual assault and murder, that looked really bad, and I feel that that was probably the thing that caused the Ramseys to be viewed with such suspicion. Even though youth pageantry is a thing in America, it's something people do, and looking back at it now, it becomes much less persuasive to me when you realize that Patsy Ramsey and her sister were both former Miss America contestants. They were both Miss West Virginia at different times. So training her daughter in how to do the things you do in a beauty pageant would not be weird to me for a former Miss West Virginia to do. It's kind of the family business. That's, you know, something that she has a great deal of experience in. And she would be training her daughter. You don't want to start doing that when you're 19. You want to start doing that like a sport or like, you know, any endeavor. If you start young, you're probably going to be better at it. You know, I remember Wayne Gretzky started playing hockey when he was 4. It's a lot easier than learning it when you're an adult. And something is, you know, of the nature of pageants, there's skills that you have to learn to do that if you want to succeed. And the idea that it would be very strange or perverse that she would be bringing her daughter into that world, I don't think is true at all. Considering that, you know, she'd been in the Miss America contest. She'd won at a state level, and she was, you know, that was her thing. But at the time, it looked really bad. I mean, it looked really bad. And I think that that has driven the public perception of the Ramseys for the ensuing years. Once some evidence was out before the public, within the press, the note became a huge issue. There's a, and I have a copy of it. In fact, I will take this opportunity to just briefly read it, and you can make of it what you will. This is handwritten, and this is what Patsy Ramsey says she found in her home on the morning of December 26th. Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We do respect your business, but not the country that it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed, and if you want her to see 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size attaché to the bank. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown paper bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. Delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be rested. If we monitor you getting the money early, We might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money, and hence, daughter, pick up for of your daughter. Any deviation from my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you not to provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be scanned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned that we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions, and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny, as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You are not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good southern common sense of yours. It is up to you now, John! Exclamation point. Victory! Exclamation point. The acronym in capitals SBTC. That is the infamous note. That is what Patsy Ramsey says she found at the foot of the stairs in her home. The note has undergone massive scrutiny, but early on, several things were cast in a way that made them seem to draw suspicion upon the Ramseys. I remember two things that particularly stuck out to me. And this is a hobby horse that I beat for a while. And my supposition at the time and for several years was that if the Ramseys were telling the truth, the note has to be real. And if you got that note, wouldn't you follow it? The fact they called 911 seemed to me then to be suspicious. If they specifically said, don't contact the police or we'll kill your daughter, and the first thing you do is call 911, sending marked cars over to your house, that seems like you never believed the note. And I feel that that is, in itself, in a narrow way, a valid criticism. However, looking back upon it, I would say that a hell of a lot of people would completely disregard those instructions and call 911. That the Ramseys probably panicked and did the first thing that you do when you're in a dangerous emergency situation is you call 911. I am far from the only person that thinks that. The former FBI criminal profiler, John E. Douglas, in his book, The Cases That Haunt Us, wrote about the Ramseys, and he believed that they were completely innocent. He believed that they had nothing to do with the murder of their daughter. He stated, many crimes are tried in the court of public opinion long before they reach a court of law, but I know of no other case in which the majority of people have decided the solution based on statistics. I know of no other case in which the public substantially believes what has been reported in the tabloids. I know of no other case in which the mainline media have let the tabloids take the lead and then reported on their reporting. And I know of no other case in which largely respectable television programs have so tried to outdo each other in sensationalism. That's what John Douglas thinks of it, and that's what I've come to think of it. But at the time, that was how I perceived it. Their calling 911 was one key piece for me. The other was, and this was made into a huge issue. The note is written on paper with a pen that came from inside the house. Both the paper and pen belonged to the Ramseys. That was, I can't tell you how important that was made to seem. Which, and I later, I'll explain why that no longer seems important to me at all. But just ask yourself, if you're a criminal, you're breaking into a home, especially, you know, be blunt, a lavish mansion, do you think they're not going to have paper and pen? Do you think they're not going to have anything to write on and write with? Practically any home is going to have some kind of pencil and paper. So why bring your own? Why bring evidence to the scene that could be linked to you? I mean, what's in it for the criminal to do that? If you break into a house or are let in or somehow get in, there's going to be paper and pen there. And that's not in and of itself suspicious at all. But that was blown up enormously into the narrative of the Ramseys are guilty. And when you really look at it objectively, that doesn't mean anything at all. There's nothing stopping someone who was in the house surreptitiously from just getting a paper and a notepad and pen that were sitting in open view and writing the note on that. That's not proof. That's not even really evidence. So, yes, but at the time it was held up as being hugely important. Another key to the narrative that the Ramseys were guilty, that was highlighted in the press, and that was taken in the worst possible way, that was deemed evidence against them, was the fact that they chose to be represented by an attorney. And that was seen, despite it completely being their legal right, that was seen as very suspicious. And that, at the time, I concurred. Well, why wouldn't you talk to the police if you were innocent and your daughter had been murdered? But the police had already decided that they were not only the prime suspects, but early on decided they were the only suspects. Well, okay, let's look at it objectively, or maybe a little more objectively. They did not ask for an attorney until after their daughter was found dead. When she was missing, they were very cooperative. Well, once she's found murdered, there's nothing more that can be done for her. And if the police are accusing you of murder and you don't ask for an attorney, I would think that you are either very naive or, you know, sadly deluded. And let's be clear here. And this is something I learned in an interview a couple of years ago on one of the anniversaries of this happening. It was about 2 years ago. I'm not sure which anniversary it was, but the press put on quite a retrospective on the case. And I remember seeing the interview with the first detective who arrived on the scene, the first Boulder PD detective who was there. And she had clearly decided that John Ramsey was guilty as soon as he came up from the basement carrying his late daughter. Well, if the police have already decided you're guilty and you don't lawyer up, I have to ask what the hell you think you're doing. You, at this point, cannot help your child, but if you're innocent, you don't want to go to prison for the rest of your life for something you didn't do. And that now seems dumbly obvious. But at the time, and I have to say, the media did a terrible job here. They portrayed their exercising their right to remain silent and exercising their right to an attorney as somehow being deeply suspicious. And instead of being downright obvious, that, you know, anybody accused of such a thing would want to do that. And I have to draw a huge distinction between when you have a missing loved one and the police are interviewing you, yes, by all means, I would be cooperative. But when your loved one is dead and they're accusing you, no, at that time you need to get an attorney. And that, to me, is just kind of common sense, but it was portrayed in the press very badly. And that fits into the larger story arc of the Ramseys were rich and privileged, and therefore they were allowed to get away with this heinous crime. And I just, that was very, you know, that was very catchy to me 20 some years ago, and for many years thereafter. But then when you really look at that, really question that for a moment, well, how rich were they? They're wealthy. They're rich people. They're richer than me. Unless I have some unknown billionaire listeners, they're probably richer than you. But they're not really rich. And even the really rich don't always get away with everything. Just because sometimes people get away with something doesn't mean all the time all these people get away with everything. The Ramseys were rich, but they weren't anywhere compared, anybody compared to, say, the DuPonts. I'm making an example here because a member of the DuPont family murdered a wrestling coach that he had hired. This is portrayed in the movie Foxcatcher, Steve Carell's darkest role, but it's based on true events. A DuPont killed a man, and people, you know, criticized the deference that he was shown by the police. But in the end, he was convicted and he died in prison. Being, and understand, the DuPonts are real power. They're, you know, really rich. And they're connected back to the beginning of this country. The Ramseys were not at that level at all. The fact you're in the country club or play golf with somebody doesn't mean you're going to be allowed to get away with the murder of a small child. Okay? This isn't letting somebody go on a drunk driving case where nobody was harmed. This is a terrible crime that you can't just buy your way out of, and you aren't going to get automatic deference from the police department or the DA's office. That is a gross exaggeration, but it's one that's believed by many, many people. And I'm not saying that that's never happened, but there's nothing that shows that that happened here. Why did the police go so easy on them? I don't think that they went easy on them. I think if you really look at the facts of the investigation and at all, you see that they were quite aggressive going after the Ramseys. And based on very little evidence. But all of these perceptions build the narrative that they were guilty, which is believed by much of the population, much of the public, and was believed by the police. Also, they were criticized, both parents were criticized for their affect, the way they acted. And that just, this is certainly far from the only case where that's happened. And I just, that always annoys me, that if somebody cries, well, they're crying too much, they're acting. If somebody's numb, well, they should be acting more emotional. Don't they care about the person that was killed? There's no playbook for how you react to the worst possible thing that could happen. There isn't one. Some people are going to go numb, freeze, not feel any emotion. Others are going to go into hysterics. There are all sorts. People react to shocking grief very differently. And no judgment should be drawn from how somebody reacts to first thinking their child is missing and then finding the child dead. I mean, that is about as bad as it gets. And to judge the facial expressions, to judge the amount or lack thereof of tears is just nonsense to me. And yet such bogus judgments were passed in the press repeatedly, constantly. Before I go into how my perceptions changed and counter-narratives in the JonBenet Ramsey case, I'd like to digress and talk for a moment about the kidnapping of Elizabeth Smart, which took place June 5th, 2002, and she was eventually found alive and rescued approximately 9 months later. I bring this up because, to me, there's a real connection, not a connection in the sense of who did what, but rather a correlation. There's a real correlation between the JonBenet Ramsey case and the Elizabeth Smart case. You could almost say that, in my opinion, for what it's worth, that Elizabeth Smart case is what would have happened had the JonBenet Ramsey kidnapping actually gone right. And I have to tell you, I was awfully judgmental of Elizabeth Smart's parents in their affect, in the way that they presented themselves, the way they talked. I perceived that they're very strange people. They're very rich people. Am I supposed to believe that some intruder broke into their home? That's preposterous, which is the perception of a lot of people about the Ramseys, that an intruder coming into the house is just not a believable scenario for that area and that situation. But that's exactly what happened with Elizabeth Smart. A stranger did come into the house and abduct her. That really happened. Now, the fact that she was found alive is what changed the perception of the Smarts. Had she been found in the home dead, I think they'd be in the same boat as the Ramseys. And I thought that at the time, that this is another JonBenet Ramsey type case, and the parents are almost certainly culpable. They either did it or know who did it, which is a huge assumption driven by almost nothing factual. But again, it's easy to believe that the wealthy, and yeah, the Smarts are pretty wealthy, that they get away with things, which sometimes is true, but doesn't mean that it's always true, and it doesn't mean that this particular individual or couple did something terrible. That's not proof, that's not even evidence. And yet, that is the way a lot of people, including myself, looked at it. At some point, mention the times in which the Ramseys have been cleared. In October of 1999, Boulder County District Attorney Alex Hunter stated that no indictments would be issued due to a lack of evidence in the case. Now, that usually would mean they're not guilty. The fact that this had been under investigation for almost 3 years and not enough evidence was found to bring a case against them seems to be kind of, should be the end of it, and in most cases would be the end of it. But, of course, the narrative had a life of its own by then, and few people seemed to know that that happened, and even fewer seemed to care. And when it came out later that the grand jury had voted to bring a case, and that D.A. Hunter had overridden them, which is his legal authority, the district attorney makes the decision, not the grand jury, that was somehow perceived as the Ramseys getting privileged preferential treatment instead of simply a charging decision that DAs around the country make on a daily basis. A frequent basis, anyway. Later, in 2008, the DA at the time, Mary Lacey, also Boulder County District Attorney. Yes, the Hunter had left and Lacey was the DA in July of 08. Stated that no one in the Ramsey family is considered a suspect and formally apologized to John Ramsey in a letter. Now, that you would think would close the case, but of course not. It has continued, and the narrative of the parents being guilty has gone on and on and on and had a life of its own. And I remember a 60 Minutes interview with John Ramsey where he said that, and I'm paraphrasing but only slightly, that they could catch the guy who did it and bring him in right now, and most of the country would believe that I was still guilty. And I'm afraid to say I think he got that right. The narrative has won the day, and that continues to the present. I don't even care to mention this part, but it can't not be mentioned. The narrative that the parents were guilty was the majority narrative in the press and among the police for quite a few years. Later, this has morphed into the mostly internet phenomena that Burke, the then 9-year-old brother of JonBenet, had murdered her, and the parents had covered it up. The police and the FBI at the time did not even consider such a possibility, and we can go into just why that didn't happen. But take it further, if that had happened, if he had hit her with a flashlight or something, and she was killed, who in their right mind would think the way to get him out of it was to stage this elaborate crime scene and write this note and pretend it's a kidnapping? Wouldn't a rational person who's looking to cover up the murder of one of their children by another simply take her to the hospital and say she fell down the stairs or something? Wouldn't that be like about a million times more sensible than staging the crime of the century? But yet, when I used to argue with people on the internet, which is a habit that I have successfully broken, because I was just giving myself a lot of stress, I learned that there is a community of people who believe to their heart of hearts that 9-year-old Burke Ramsey murdered his sister, and then his parents covered it up for him. I won't even begin to go into the flaws. I hate to even bring it up, except if you look into this stuff at all on the internet, it comes up. So it needs to be mentioned. But it's just, it's dumb. It didn't happen. But that didn't stop the press from jumping in their own sensational way and suggesting in, I believe it was 2016, that CBS aired a docuseries about the case suggesting JonBenet's brother, Burke Ramsey, may have been the culprit. Burke filed a $250 million defamation lawsuit against the network, the production company, and one of the experts featured in the special, a Dr. Werner Spitz. Burke had filed a separate defamation lawsuit against Spitz in October, stemming from a comment the doctor made during a radio interview. This is coming from CNN. The lawsuit was ultimately settled, as so often is the case, with an undisclosed payment, but that was incredibly, in my opinion, incredibly irresponsible of CBS to throw something out there that just has nothing behind it. And, you know, the flaws are numerous, and it just doesn't stand up to any kind of scrutiny. The one thing I've noticed from doing some internet debating about it is that the people who believe that almost all mention, my brother abused me when I was young. And that is pretty much it. And that's where that narrative gets its momentum. A lot of people have suffered through a lot of really bad things, but Burke Ramsey, at the age of 9, did not murder his sister, and his parents did not do the most ridiculous cover-up ever. And I'm going to lay it to rest because we're going to change the subject into what I now believe and how that came to be. Just to look at the case as a cover-up. If you're trying to cover something up, that's the worst cover-up ever, okay? You're going to get noticed. You're going to get huge amounts of attention. If the Ramseys were guilty, let's say they, for the sake of argument, that either one or both of the parents were guilty, wouldn't you simply dispose of her body and make something up? That would be far more sensible, if you're trying to get away with a crime, then calling 911 and asking the police to be sent to your house where your child's body is. That makes absolutely no sense. And then you've staged this elaborate garroting, and she's tied up, and you have this fake note, and that's not the way to cover up anything. And remember that Jaminé was out of school for Christmas vacation. There was nobody, who's going to notice she's gone, who has any authority to do anything about it, for quite a while. Why on earth, in a matter of hours, would the parents, who have no criminal background, who have no law enforcement background, for that matter, try to stage this elaborate scene and make it look like something it's not, but don't do the things that you'd probably want to do if it was a cover-up? Wouldn't you get rid of her body first? I mean, just to be blunt, wouldn't that be if you were guilty, wouldn't that be the first thing you do, is get rid of her body so that the kidnappers have her and you don't know where she is? Why on earth would you leave the body in your home? That makes no sense if you're a guilty parent covering it up, or covering up for your homicidal 9-year-old. That's the reasoning has never really stood up to scrutiny, but yet that's the accepted narrative. We have, as Dr. Richard Spence said, you usually have very few facts. That's the end of the quote, but he goes on to say that the rest is story. It's narrative. It's stories we tell to explain the facts. And there's a hell of a lot of that in the Jaminé Ramsey case. So I would like to, I guess I should briefly just mention that there was a guy who confessed to it, who confessed to killing Jaminé, and He was John Mark Carr, who confessed to killing Jaminé in 2006 for the screamingly obvious reason that he was in jail in Thailand for unrelated sex offenses and badly wanted to get the hell out of Thailand and come to the United States. And his story didn't make any sense. His confession was completely false and didn't match the timeline, let alone have any evidence. It's clear he just wanted to get out of Thailand and apparently was successful, at least for a time. So that happened. There was a confession, but it was a false confession. Speaking of false confessions, I would like to go into the case that truly changed the narrative for me, that changed how I perceived the Jaminé Ramsey case, and in fact led to my reversal in my perception of it. And that began, there was an incident which was documented in the This American Life podcast from NPR, in episode 581, Anatomy of Doubt, which broadcast on February 26, 2016. And it discussed a disturbing story, true story, where a young woman was raped in her apartment, and the police and basically everyone did not believe her. And the two key reasons that came up why they did not believe her was that she didn't act the way a rape victim would act. I guess she didn't have the handbook for how you're supposed to act after you're brutally sexually assaulted. Yeah, the affect issue. And the fact that all of the physical evidence, she was restrained, she was tied up, and all the items used to do that came from within her own apartment. And that was seen as very significant. And she was, in fact, coerced by investigators into confessing that she made the whole thing up. She didn't make the whole thing up. It completely happened. But she was pressured into a false confession and was convicted of filing a false report. Years later, a serial rapist was caught, and amongst his possessions was a picture of her tied up and her driver's a picture, in the picture, her driver's license is clearly visible, identifying her. He was a very sick serial offender who liked to claim trophies and would take pictures of his victims with their ID so he could remember that. Yes, that happened. And she was exonerated of having made it all up. But what strikes me is the two things that were used against her. She's not acting the way someone would act under these circumstances. And while the items came from in the house, it turned out that was that guy's MO, the offender's MO, was to only use objects from within the victim's house. And that he had broken into her house and restrained her using her shoelaces and other things that were in the house. And the fact they came from her own house was seen as crucial, which immediately reminded me of the note in the JonBenet Ramsey case, and that the pen and paper came from in the house was somehow trumpeted as being of key importance instead of, well, you know, if you're a criminal and you break into somebody's place, they're probably going to have something to write on and to write with. So yes, that caused me to look into it a little further because I realized that, wait, that was like the key to the whole thing. And yet, it doesn't really mean anything. A key. But that was trumpeted as being just this big deal. And when you really look at it, it doesn't mean anything. It means whoever did it used materials from in the house. Okay. And what? That proves what? It proves nothing. So I began to re-examine my sources and my perceptions. And went from being what they call in the true crime internet world an RDI, Ramsey's did it, believer, small b believer. I don't know who did it, but I don't believe the Ramseys did it, to being an intruder did it, IDI. The fact is, intruders exist, okay? Elizabeth Smart was kidnapped by an intruder. One of the experts brought in to, in fact, a key expert brought in to assist in the JonBenet Ramsey investigation was a detective, Lou Schmidt, who was a experienced homicide detective. He completely believed that the Ramseys were innocent and demonstrated how a person, and he was an older man at the time, But how a person could climb into their basement and come up into their house and not leave any evidence that was different from what was found, and not, you know, could do that, and it would match the crime scene the way it was found. And Lou Schmidt, while he got a lot of respect for his career from fellow law enforcement officers, in this case was pretty much disregarded. And which is kind of amazing, because he had a lot more experience than many people involved in this investigation. And yet his theory that an intruder did come into the house was more or less discarded. So you have some fairly credible people, Detective Lou Schmidt and former FBI agent, John E. Douglas, I blanked on his name there for a moment, determining that the Ramseys are completely innocent and were not involved in any way, which leads one to ask, well, then who did do this? And there we don't have a definitive answer. There have been many suspects put forward, most of whom were convicted sex offenders, but there's been no DNA match. There is DNA that's still being tested. In fact, very recently, the father of JonBenet, John Ramsey, petitioned the state of Colorado to place a independent agency in charge of the continuing investigation, and in fact threatened to sue because the Boulder Police Department was not pursuing the investigation and was not taking any action. Apparently his request was, he has agreed to what the state has decided to do, and that is to do a cold case review by a team that will be composed of professional investigative, analytical, and forensic experts from across the state. So they are going to do a full reinvestigation of the JonBenet Ramsey case using an independent team of experienced experts and consulting with private labs about testing very small amounts of DNA that have not so far been tested. So that is a current ongoing development, which rather begs the question, is that what a guilty murdering father does? Threaten to sue the state if they don't investigate the case further? And that has been, you know, one ongoing counter-narrative. The fact that John Ramsey insists on this case being investigated further. If he'd gotten away with murder, wouldn't he just let it go? What guilty person keeps hounding the police to further investigate the thing that they did? That doesn't make any sense. That runs counter to everything that a person who'd gotten away with a murder would do. You certainly wouldn't want it reopened, looked into it, but that's exactly what he's demanded repeatedly for years. And I think that speaks loudly to his innocence. There are many possible intruders, and I am going to put forth a theory that I have not heard elsewhere, but that makes sense to me, for what it's worth. we'll go back, if I may, for just a moment. John E. Douglas put together a psychological profile of who he thought the killer was. And he didn't name any names. He didn't have any names. But he said that he believed that it was a young person who had had some sort of professional grievance against John Ramsey. That the real target in this was John Ramsey, not JonBenet Ramsey. And that it was not a sex crime, but was rather an attack at John Ramsey to hurt him in the worst way possible. Now, whether I can honestly not recall from Douglas's work whether he believed it was going to be a kidnapping and then it went wrong, or if the kidnapping was all a red herring. But he believed that it was a younger person who knew John Ramsey from business and wanted to get at him. As best I recall, theory from Lou Schmidt was that this was a repeat, serial sex offender. And that has been the statement of others, that it was, there were a number of people who were brought up as possible suspects, including the fact that there was a group home that had registered sex offenders and not that far from the Ramsey house. I have a bit of a different view. And without, again, getting into the weeds and the evidence, suffice it to say that for a person to break into the basement, you'd have to be a fairly slight build. I would like to suggest, and it's just a possibility, I have no more evidence for this narrative than for any other. And I wouldn't say this about John Ramsey, what I'm going to say, if his character hadn't been so thoroughly assassinated that nothing that some podcaster says is going to make any difference. Everybody, not everybody, but many, many people think that he murdered and possibly molested his daughter. What I'm going to say isn't nearly as bad as that, okay? Nothing could really be worse than that, calling him a murderer and everything. My theory, for what it's worth, and take it for that, is that the murder was committed by a woman, and that that woman had been John Ramsey's mistress. And that makes sense to me. That would cover a lot of bases here. That whoever did this, I don't buy that it was a sex crime against JonBenet by some pedophile because of the lack of DNA. I mean, if this is your sexual fantasy and this is what you've been thinking about, I'm suspecting that you would leave some DNA behind if you're a violent male child rapist. But if your goal is to hurt John Ramsey in the worst possible way, that would match a spurned lover, and perhaps, and this is pure speculation, but perhaps a spurned lover whom John Ramsey had persuaded to get an abortion. One of the things that happened in the case was that shortly before her death, JonBenet was in the local press for a beauty pageant that she won. Perhaps that triggered a former lover who had aborted what would have been his child to feel that that should have been my daughter, and caused her to want to lash out at John Ramsey in the most hurtful way possible. And few things could be more hurtful than to first find that your child is missing and then have that false hope destroyed and find that, no, your child is actually dead in your own house. And that would wreck a person's life, and it clearly wrecked his. I think that that is a viable theory. It coincides, and, you know, I don't have a source on this, but I did watch the interview, that, I'm sorry, that's perhaps misphrased, but the statement, the only statement that John Ramsey made to police about who could have done this before he had exercised his right to an attorney, between the time of his daughter being found dead and him exercising his right to an attorney, he makes a very brief statement to police. And they ask him, well, who could have done this? And he suggested two possibilities. That it could have been someone who was angry at him for business matters, or it could have been some woman I used to date. And that has never, to best of my knowledge, never been followed up on. And again, is it proof of anything? No. It's not even evidence. It's really not much of anything. But it is a counter-narrative. It is something that is a story that makes sense. It's a story that explains the facts. That's what narrative is. And these facts can be explained to me. These facts can be explained much better by this narrative than by the narrative that the parents did. Just answer the obvious question. Well, if John Ramsey had an idea of who possibly could have done this, why wouldn't he share that with the police and the guilty could be caught and convicted? Remember, if this is a mistress of his, this is somebody he had an affair with, that would destroy, possibly, I mean, I don't know their family dynamics, but that might destroy the relationship that he has with his wife and with his children. And it will not bring JonBenet back. There might be, in his mind, no point to mentioning a suspect, which, if she's caught, would destroy the existing relationships in his life. So why is he asking for this now? Why is he threatening to sue the state if they don't reinvestigate? Well, think about it. His wife at the time, Patsy, has died years ago. His kids are all adults. He may see this as being now a time when it's safe for her to be caught and for justice to be done in some form. So that, again, is just a story, just a narrative, but it's a narrative that explains a lot of the facts. And that's my working theory as of right now. This is The Weird Part. I am your host, Vincent Treewell. Thank you for listening to me ramble on about this case for the last hour and some change. I truly appreciate it. Thank you, and good night.